Welcome to the Path of Reason. This is Adam, and joining me is Derek.
Hello.
This is going to be podcast number 11. It's going to be the first of four in a series entitled, Is Atheism Stupid? And basically this series originated from an email that we received from a Christian claiming atheism is stupid. And I'm actually going to read what they wrote in this message here. They said that, I'm waiting for someone to get to 10 based on fact, not idiotic opinion. To get past the statements, there is no God and he doesn't exist, there has to be some hard thinking going on. LOL. I could give a list of 40 legitimate reasons why I believe in Christianity and not atheism without name calling. Now, I don't think we do much name calling unless it's appropriate, but anyways, Derek and I are going to respond to this person, and we're going to go through all 40 points. The first 10 is going to be in the first, and then so on. And Derek and I are going to take turns going back and forth, so here is our response. And Derek, if you want to go ahead and get things started.
Okay, I just want to say too, I'm guessing he just made these up off the top of his head, because they don't necessarily seem like your typical, proofs like Pascal's Wager and things of that nature. I think he just sat down and just, off the top of his head, just listed out 40 things that somehow,
it seems that way.
Some of them might have ties in the arguments we've already heard, but the reason I think we picked this one is just because it's more of an attack on not only us, but just, things that we haven't necessarily heard in the context. So anyway, number one, he wrote, as it is written, God has chosen the weak things in the world, those things of no account, to confine the wise. And it is certainly true in this case. So is he's basically trying to say that, he's, in a weird way, I think he's trying to associate with the uneducated people in this world who are more likely to be Christian, that they're here for the purpose to confound the wise.
Right.
Now, this comes from Paul's letter to the Corinthians. It's a couple of verses from 1 Corinthians 1:26 through 27, where it says, for consider your call, brethren, not many of you are wise according to worldly standards. Not many were powerful, and not many were of noble birth. But God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. Now, the reason this is illogical is because what he fails to realize is that these letters were written in order to set up churches, but they weren't like each person and each member of the congregation would get a copy to read. Most people could not read and write, and the earliest followers of Christianity were the ignorant, uneducated, illiterate people of the society. Now, as we all know in life, the less educated you are, the more likely you are to buy into something. Like, think about telemarketers, and when people call you, I'm the kind of person who's smart enough to hang up, but there are people who believe these people, and they buy the products, and then they get scammed.
Right.
So, in my mind, when I read a verse like this, Paul is trying to justify to them the fact that they're stupid, but he's saying, listen, you're not very smart. None of you are very smart. And God chose you to shame the wise. Now, when I read something like this, I interpret it as something you would say to somebody who is dumb and uneducated. I mean, not necessarily dumb, but I mean, these people could not read, they could not write. They were part of the low class of society, whereas Paul comes from a higher class. So this is a higher class type of person trying to convince very uneducated, illiterate people of these things and to set up churches.
Right.
Think about it. I feel like this is a clear message of manipulation, and when I read it, I interpret it as not a way to say to myself, hey, I'm stupid, but that's okay because the Bible says that stupid people are here to shame the wise.
Right.
I see it as something you would say to a stupid person to justify them to join your religion, to get them to be a part of your group, because it's always the very illiterate, poor, uneducated people that give everything to their churches and give everything to their congregation, and they continue to struggle, and the higher-ups manipulate them and benefit off of the most. So I don't. This is no proof that God is real.
Right.
This is proof that, you know, the Bible says something, but just because there's stupid people in the world is not proof. And I think that that's, you know, he's trying to say because there's stupid people in the world, it backs up what the Bible says. So there, I mean, that's like the dumbest argument I could possibly have ever heard.
I know, and we pretty much find that throughout these, but, you know, still, it's, I think it's worth responding to. But, like, the way I, when I was a Christian, the way I interpreted that passage was, like, basically, the belief itself doesn't make sense, you know, to wise people or smart, intelligent people. But, you know, God puts that belief above wisdom, like it's, you know, beyond wisdom or something, so that it has some deeper meaning when it really doesn't. I actually just wanted to read what Celsus, a 2nd century Greek writer, commented and criticized the early Christians of his time. He said something I thought was really appropriate for this. This, he says, "The following are the rules laid down by them." And by them, he's talking about Christians. "Let no one come to us who has been instructed or who is wise or prudent, for such qualifications are deemed evil by us. But if there are any ignorant or unintelligent or uninstructed or foolish persons, let them come with confidence, by which words, acknowledging that such individuals are worthy of their God, they manifestly show that they desire and are able to gain over only the silly and the mean and the stupid with women and children." So even then, you know, like the early Christians, even then they had criticizers who realized that they discouraged wisdom and intelligence and just blind, stupid submission, because that's really the only way they could get, continue to grow and get followers.
Yeah. Think about how the world works now. Only the dumb people fall for scams. I mean, all religion aside, they don't have commercials on late at night selling holy water or selling these gimmick products for nothing. People buy them because they're gullible. But who buys them? Very dumb people. People like me think about things. We break them down. We analyze all the evidence before we make an informed decision.
Right.
But you're more likely to buy into a certain type of ideology if you're not as educated. And just because the Bible says that the dumb people are here for the purpose of shaming the wise is not an excuse to stay stupid.
Right. Exactly.
So, next.
All right, number two is, this is what the Christian argument, I guess, says, "Many say that Satan could have been the author of the Bible. I thought you said that Christianity was mythology, so you admit to the existence of Satan." Now, this is embarrassing, I think, to say the least, because it doesn't even make any sense, but it's a common thing we run into, but this is just another dead argument from Christians that we hear a lot, and people assume atheists are Satan worshippers for some reason. And I was just talking to one of my atheist friends the other day, and she had the same experience at work. You know, she said she didn't believe in God, and people automatically assume, like, oh, you're a devil worshipper or something, which is just ridiculous. But basically, it's like a simple minded way of trying to use logic, you know, to say, well, you say Satan's written the Bible, then you're admitting Satan exists or something, which I don't think any atheist would ever say that.
Yeah.
And if they did, then they're not an atheist. But it's just a way, an attempt for Christians to try to manipulate an argument in a very weak minded way. when this person says that many say that Satan could have been the author of the Bible, I'm assuming they're referring to atheists, but atheists don't believe in God and therefore do not believe in Satan. End of argument. Now, the only time an atheist would ever claim that maybe Satan wrote the Bible is only to demonstrate a point, and that is that some Christians claim that Satan wrote or influenced the texts of other religions like Islam, etc., and that is why those other texts can't be trusted, according to the Christians. But from an atheist point of view, the Muslims could just as easily say the Bible is influenced by Satan, so how does this point prove anything? It doesn't. It's just an embarrassing, immature way of trying to prove this person's point, which can just as easily be said, like, atheists don't believe in God, and since Satan is a character that came from God, we don't believe in Satan either. So that's, it just doesn't make any sense.
I think the reason they do that is because sometimes we'll say, like, you know, like, atheists will point things out of the Bible that they consider to be evil, and everyone's like, if your God's so loving, you know, like, why is this here, why is that there? Or, like, how many more people did God kill in the Bible than Satan? Mm-hmm. But when they talk, they're talking about the characters. They're not talking about it like we actually believe it, and that's why we reject it. It's right. Like we're saying, think, people. Like, God murders people more than Satan in the Bible. Satan doesn't do anything as a character. We're talking about it like it's a piece of literature.
Like a mythology, exactly.
Yeah.
Just trying to prove a point based on their beliefs, you know?
Yeah. And number three, he says, the empirical evidence of God's existence has been examined already by those with whom he had contact in the person of Jesus Christ, the physical proof of God's existence. And he quotes Colossians 1:15 as somehow verification for this weak argument. Colossians 1:15 says, he is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. So basically they're saying God is invisible to everyone, can't see him. But he says the empirical evidence of God's existence has already been examined by those with whom he had contact in the person of Jesus Christ. So I don't know what exactly he's talking about, research about the existence of God by any of the people that followed Jesus around. Nor is there anything to actually back up or prove the fact that these people tried to examine. I mean, the Bible right here, where verse he says, states that he's invisible. So how can you have empirical evidence for something that's invisible?
Right.
It usually, and that's like the invisible pink unicorn, you know?
Yeah.
The reason you can't prove it is because it's invisible, but it's there. Just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not there. Well, that's a cop-out backdoor argument, you know what I mean?
Right, exactly.
It's like, how could, but the fact that he says, you know, empirical evidence of God's existence, what empirical evidence? If there was no empirical evidence now, what makes you think there was back then? And just because they somehow analyzed the evidence? No! There was no analysis of evidence for the existence of God. They didn't sit around in the Bible debating about things and saying, oh, we tested this, and this is the result, therefore God exists. This is nowhere in the Bible. This is a very weak argument that I don't even really think needs that much debunking. It just pretty much is self-defeating in a sense.
It's just like, I mean, you could say that about anything. You could say there's empirical evidence for the flying spaghetti monster.
Yeah.
But without actually showing what that is, you may as well say nothing.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to figure out what this person is trying to say, because they say the empirical evidence of God's existence has been examined already by those with whom he had contact in the person of Jesus Christ. Like, it doesn't even make sense.
I'm trying to say that Jesus is the proof that God exists.
Right, and that the people that were around him, like the apostles, examined the empirical evidence, which at the very best would prove that Jesus existed, not God, you know?
Yeah, but even so, there is very little proof that Jesus even existed. And there are quite a lot of arguments from many different sources, like, you know, Bob Price and this woman, Acharya S., who, you know, have written many things about analyzing whether or not Jesus was even a real person or just a made-up character,
right,
like similar to maybe Noah or even Adam and Eve in the Old Testament, whereas he had no real physical basis. But then again, we're not going to get into all that because that could take up a ton of podcasts.
Right. But basically, in that statement, there's not even testable evidence for the existence of Jesus. And if there is, it's like hardly anything at all. So that's, I don't even know what he's trying to say with that, you know?
Yeah, I think nothing. I mean, he's trying to say that...
I'm assuming it's a he, I don't know why, but...
Yeah,
it's for the sake of argument.
Yeah. I just think he thinks that Jesus was the physical proof and whatever, but just because a book says a character existed does not mean he did, nor does it say that any of his followers examined him as somehow proof. Just because, you know, it says he walked on water does not mean he really walked on water, you know?
Exactly.
But anyway, moving on.
All right, number four. 300 of the most popularly recognized prophecies that he is the one, not to mention all of his miracles, which have been witnessed and reported by them. Again, this person is saying something without actually giving us any proof or references or anything. But basically, 300 of the most popularly recognized prophecies that he is the one, I guess, I'm assuming God or whatever. But it's like, who recognizes these prophecies to be fulfilled with Jesus, you know?
Yeah.
There's no independent sources outside of Christianity itself. And this also addresses the issue of, does, like, the popularity of a belief make it true? For example, there are approximately 1 billion Muslims in the world who popularly recognize prophecies claiming Muhammad to be the prophet of Allah. So if we're to believe that the popularity of a belief helps confirm its truth, then it would be pretty compelling to believe that Christians should be looking into Islam, because it's also one of the fastest growing religions in the world. But also, as far as, like, the miracles go, you may as well not say anything, because, like, this supposed miracles are witnessed and reported to this day, and they cross all religious and spiritual boundaries. And even with all the media coverage and witnesses of the miracles today, they remain unconvincing and lack any kind of solid evidence, because they claim to do extraordinary things with, and there's nothing to actually prove it. But if you imagine that, like, the miracles of Jesus hold any more credence when compared to, you know, anything else that happens nowadays, and considering that the miracles of Jesus happened in a pre-scientific age, and again, with the no independent sources referring to these amazing miracles that were witnessed by so many people, if they were witnessed by thousands of people, why didn't anyone else write about it? Maybe they did. And even if they did, you know, we don't have proof of that. We don't have the documents that show us that. So we can't assume that people witness these things. So basically, the only source or reports of these miracles are in the Bible itself. And why wouldn't any contemporaries of Jesus comment on these amazing things when there's barely, like we said before, like, any historic record of the existence of Jesus, let alone anything he said or did?
Yeah, this transitions into his next so-called proof when he says, "You talk of claims made in a book with no evidence. Each report was originally an independent entity written by each eyewitness for the benefit of others, which were only later collated into an individual volume for convenience, since they all dealt with the 20 same subject." He apparently did not spend much time paying attention in English class.
Yeah.
As most of this is misspelled, you know, this, he does not understand the concept of proper grammar, or, you know, he doesn't even use the spell check. I guess what he's trying to say here is that each report of Jesus was independently written by each eyewitness for the benefit of others, which were only later collected into individual volumes for convenience. I guess he's trying to refer to the, not only the Council of Nicaea, but before the Council of Nicaea, each report was originally an independent entity written by each eyewitness. Eyewitness, apparently, to what he's vaguely saying, is to the crucifixion. But the Bible says that there were over 500 witnesses. Now, if he understood history and cultural development, he would know that illiteracy, like I had mentioned earlier, was rampant during this time. I mean, the only people who could actually read and write were rich scribes and the very high class society.
Right.
Your average everyday hardworking person who'd be doing their thing could not read, could not write. So when he says something, each report was originally an independent entity written by each eyewitness, that is a lie. There's no evidence to suggest that any of these so-called eyewitnesses wrote down anything. We have no evidence. They wouldn't be able to. It was oral tradition for a very long time until Constantine came along and said, okay, we got to organize this a little better because it's so random and scattered. That's when things became more solidified.
Right.
Almost 300 years after Jesus had supposedly died, but there were no records written by anyone in and around that time, no evidence of anyone. There's not a scroll out there that says, and when Jesus was nailed to the cross, I witnessed this and he bled, and I was just a random guy in the crowd. I don't really know anything about this. There's nothing. The only thing we can, you know, go on is the words of the Bible, which are scattered and vague at best. So this is not proof of anything.
Right. And what time frame was the earliest gospel written? Like, wasn't it like
30 AD? They think it was the Gospel of Mark, maybe, right? One of the first.
Still, like, that's, was it like 30 years after?
Yeah, like Jesus? Mark's gospel is one of the it's one of the, in my opinion, better ones. It's not filled with the usual nonsensical, like, mumbo jumbo, and it talks more in real terms, as maybe indicating that, you know, he was a, you know, like, just a regular person, and it talks about how he became anointed after baptism and stuff. I mean, it's just one of the many books, but I think, and most scholars consider to be, you know, the earliest account of anything having to do with Jesus.
Right. And again, that sort of carries over into the next one, which says, this is number 6, it says, the Bible had 40 different authors over a period of 1,500 years, so you cannot conclude that there was collusion designed to subjugate humanity by deceptive presentation of the facts. And actually, that's exactly what happened. There's many examples, but the most obvious one is, like you were saying before, the Council of Nicaea. Because there were numerous debates over the doctrines of Christianity early on in its history, which resulted in conflicts and wars, even amongst the early Christians themselves. So what happened was the Emperor Constantine called for the Council of Nicaea in 325, in which the varying bishops and church fathers of the time met to discuss and eventually vote on what they believed to be the true Christian religion, and to give us a collection of the scriptures that we have in the Bible. And the simple fact that these men argued and voted over what Christians now believe, while under the supervision of an emperor who had his own motives and aspirations, should at the very least make someone suspicious. So it's not like a natural process that, you know, there were always four gospels like so many Christians think. It was something that was debated and argued over, and people killed each other over it. Christians.
Yeah.
And even to think that the Bible wasn't manipulated for whatever reason, because it was written by 40 different authors, even which amongst them had varying and conflicting beliefs, you know, between each other. it's hardly consistent. So, like, saying that the Bible has 40 different authors hurts the argument, if anything. You know, it doesn't prove anything. If all 40 authors over a period of 1500 years were all saying the same thing, that would be a little bit more convincing. I mean, still, it wouldn't. I mean, but it would be better for their argument. You know, so again, it's another, he's just saying something and making a huge assumption and not giving us any fact or evidence of any sort.
Yeah. Number 7 is just ridiculous. He says, also there reported the signed gift abilities given to his followers for the promotion of his kingdom during the church's infancy, which authenticated Jesus Christ in the fulfillment of his promises to them. I think he's trying to say that when Jesus, in the Bible it says Jesus told his followers they'd be able to heal people, they would be able to go around performing miracles just like Jesus did, and this would be the proof to people of his kingdom of heaven, or, you know, that he was legitimate, basically, and the prophecies were legitimate. Well, there's, again, no evidence outside the Bible that these people were going around performing miracles. I mean, the Bible says that you can pick up a snake and drink poison, and if you have enough faith, you won't be harmed. I challenge any Christian out there to give this a try and see if it actually works.
Isn't that one of those passages that was added, like, much later that...
Yeah.
It doesn't appear until, like, medieval times, like...
Yeah. Christians don't know this, though. They don't know the history or the development of the writings of their own Bible. They just assume that it was always in its form and that it has never changed, but it's actually changed a lot.
Right.
But, I mean, again, it's a whole nother show in itself.
And we have, the thing with that is, we have documents to show how it changed. Believers or not, like, there is evidence to show how the Bible changed from the earliest copies that we have.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I think he's trying to say here that the proof is in, like, what happened afterwards, and that all these people had these abilities. And I think even today there are people who argue that, oh, well, what about faith healers and people like Benny Hinn? I mean, these men are scam artists. They don't legitimately do anything at all. Right. They're like, oh, he, you know, my grandmother went to see him and she had a headache, and Benny Hill touched her and her headache went away. Well, you can't go up on stage with a newborn baby who's born without any arms or legs and say to Benny Hinn, can you please regrow my child's limbs? Because he won't. Right. But it seems he's really good at curing migraines, blisters, arthritis, you know, things that could go away just by a quick shot of adrenaline from the human body. And I mean, Christians, again, not all Christians, but the people who buy into this nonsense that somehow these miracles are occurring is somehow proof. These miracles are sketchy. These so-called things going on are ridiculous. I mean, there's no proof that these people aren't just scamming people.
Right.
I'm actually working on a couple of videos for YouTube. It's going to be a little project I'm doing about faith healers and these people who go around making these claims and people buy into them. And I'm actually going to show how and why Christians are manipulated by their pastors, and how that's just basic sales tactics to get people to start believing things that are occurring that really aren't, and how to interpret in your everyday life a God, quote unquote, working, whereas it's just your own personal interpretation based on something you were taught, and how pastors don't focus on the rational parts of your brain, they focus on the emotional side. That's why it's always a story by Christians of, I used to be an alcoholic and Jesus saved me, or blah blah blah, I used to be like the scum of the earth and somehow because of Jesus I am cured, therefore I, you know, Jesus is real, whereas it's just you basically overcame something by believing something else.
Right.
But you don't, you didn't necessarily, it wasn't a miracle, it just happened, you know.
Right. Well, we're on number 8, right?
Yeah.
Alright, number 8 says, Then there is the resurrection from the dead. Jesus Christ had many hostile witnesses, but none of them could successfully refute the facts that were public knowledge, though they had ample opportunity to do so. Again, it's saying something without showing us the proof, other than the Bible itself.
Yeah.
And if this person can name one hostile witness of Jesus that confirmed the resurrection from the dead, I will be amazed. Like, show me, just tell me one person. And it's like there's no historical record of what this person is saying other than the Bible again. And the only witnesses to the supposed resurrection are the believers themselves. And so this really proves nothing whatsoever.
Yep.
I was really, I don't know, when I go through these arguments, I really hope for something that like stumps me, like something that I have to do research for, you know?
Yeah.
Because I remember those days. Like, I only ran into those issues when I was a Christian, and I'm trying to figure out parts of the Bible and stuff, and I'd have to do the research to try and refute things, and obviously, I wasn't able to.
That brings me to another argument. This is number 9 that he had sent us, where he says, Jesus changed and influenced history with lasting results as no man has ever been able to do. So he's basically trying to say that Jesus is such an influential person in history that no man has ever been able to duplicate it. Well, that's because there's always constant promotion of Christianity in all forms, everywhere. It's like, but he hasn't changed anything about history. I mean, if it wasn't Jesus, it would be some other deity, some other person that humans would believe in. I mean, just like thousands of years, the Greeks believed in Zeus and the Egyptians believed in Ra. I mean, they didn't just walk around saying, you know, we know they're not real. We know Zeus doesn't really exist. We're going to build massive temples to him and sacrifice animals to him for no reason. We know he, you know what I mean? It's like we are living in the time of belief for Jesus and, you know, the Judeo-Christian gods. I mean, in the future, we might give way to new things, but I doubt it. I think we're hitting a point in human progression where we're starting to come to our senses. Obviously, not all of us, but I think on a more massive level. But the name Jesus Christ may be known throughout the world, but it's only because he has a pretty good campaign, basically. It's like, there are always missionaries, there are always people, but it's not like he's influenced history to make a positive change for people. I mean, the, you know, development of medicine and, you know, learning science that have saved countless lives. I mean, think about the Black Plague, where 20 million people died over the course of 6 years. Well, Jesus didn't step in and help people. We figured out how to take care of it ourselves, and that is more influential than just some character in a popular book. Yeah, so there's a book, there's a character. It doesn't really prove anything. Just because the name Jesus exists does not necessarily mean that he's influenced history with lasting results.
Right.
People have caused things to happen. Jesus has done nothing himself, if he was a person at all.
Well, perhaps, I mean, even so, I mean, there are some people, even like atheists, who say they appreciate some of the teachings of Jesus, you know, the non-violent parts, at least, you know,
yeah,
that were very different for the time that he lived in, and we can only assume that these are things that he actually said. But even so, what does being an influence on history have to do with anything? You know, Hitler influenced history. Everyone knows who Hitler is, you know, like, what does that say? Is what he was teaching the truth? Obviously not. So just because, again, that you're popular or you have an influence, that's great, I guess, you know? I mean, that's just part of history and part of the way things work out. It doesn't support that particular person's belief system at all.
Yeah.
So, and on to number 10. again, let's see. Jesus Christ's claims were validated, supported, reinforced, and authenticated by his miracles, which the people obviously recognized as supernatural in nature, and which none could refute. His enemies could only mock, saying they were of the devil.
What?
Yeah, exactly. And does this person seriously think they're making a point or proving anything?
I mean, these are fact-based proofs, according to him.
Right, but it's like, again, if you look to miracles as proof of someone's claims, why do you deny the miracles of all the other religions that occurred even during Jesus' time and even up until today? Why is there no other historic resources or evidence for the occurrence of these miracles outside the Bible itself? Because you say no one could refute these miracles, but people did. And even Celsus in the 2nd century was criticizing Christians for their beliefs. And, I mean, messiahs performing miracles were a dime a dozen in those days. So none of this is surprising.
Yeah, I agree.
That concludes the first 10, as painful as that was. If any Christian can, maybe, if they think they can do better with these, I mean, we're still going to go through these, but, I mean, if you have some really interesting and challenging proofs of Christianity, please feel free to send us a message through the contact page at pathofreason.com or send us an email, and we'll address it either on a podcast or in an article or something. Because these are disappointing, to say the least. But
anything except, I mean, anything that you can actually verify.
Right.
Anything provable. I mean, remember, personal experience does not prove anything.
Right.
Other beliefs and gods claim the same stuff. So anything, any arguments, anything you can possibly do, send it to us, email us, post it in the forums, we'll take a look at it.
I don't know.
Please, challenge us.
Maybe there's, I don't know, I'm just looking down through these and some of them seem interesting at least, not compelling, but I don't know, we'll see how it goes. We'll see if we get any ones that stump us somehow.
Yeah. We will take a look at them as we go along.
Yep. Alright, well, thanks to everyone for listening. Again, this is the first in a series of 4. We'll address numbers 11 through 20. In the next podcast, we'll probably do that next week, so keep listening and keep following the path of reason.